You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 582.
On flopcast.net.
Kevin and Cornflake like to have coffee and cartoons, and so they turned on their microphone and made a Flopcast just for you. Might be sorry, they'll still turn your sad frown upside down. Coming at you live from Chicken Town.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin.
We're still back in the 80s this week. 82.
It's really where we belong.
In some ways, we never left. Yeah, we're talking 1982 today for Flopcast 582. That's the plan. It's going to be a quick one, I think, because, you know, we've been to 1982. We lived it. We don't need to dwell on it too much, but just a little bit today. Let's get started, however, with National Whatever Day.
This week, we're going to talk about something I enjoyed for the first time in the 80s, because on July 8th, it is National Freezer Pop Day.
Okay, sure.
Which, for our purposes, we might just shorten to National Freeze Pop Day, because we really like freeze pop around here.
We are certainly fans of freeze pop, both the Boston-based synth pop band and the Frozen Thing for the kids.
The Frozen Thing, and what distinguishes the freezer pop from a popsicle is whether or not there's a stick in it.
Yeah, the freeze pop is in like that, the little tall, thin plastic pouch.
That's right.
That's the freeze pop. Yeah, I know a freeze pop. Have you had a freeze pop in the last 40 years?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I like to squeeze out the contents and mix them with booze, don't you?
Oh, wait, that's diabolical. That never even occurred to me. Look at you.
Oh, it's so good.
Always innovating.
How are you not doing that? They go so well with rum.
I had a freeze pop last summer. And before that, I think it's been a long time, probably decades.
Did you get your choice of flavors?
I don't even remember what it was, but I met up with my little running group and it was a miserable hot summer day. And we ran like 6 miles and we were wiped out and crazy. And this one dude, though, he had a cooler on reserve, end of the run. He pulls this thing out and he's got freeze pops for everybody.
Making him the hero of the story.
It was a Christmas miracle. Christmas in July. Yeah, so I had that's my one freeze pop just last summer in the last several decades, I think. I got to get back on board.
Back on the freeze pops.
Got to get back on the freeze pops. You're right.
When they are available, you got to be the first to get to them. Because otherwise you get stuck with the flavors nobody likes.
Oh, I didn't know that. So certain flavors sell out fast? I thought they all just came in like mixed variety packs.
They do. So if you get the variety pack, at least where I grew up, the red ones always disappeared first.
Oh, so you don't mean in line at the store. You mean in line
as
they're being distributed to the children.
Like at school or at daycare or whatever.
All right, I thought you meant there was a run on certain flavors at the store. And that's the part I didn't understand. Okay, that makes way more sense. So you're hanging around the daycare centers and the schools with your flask of rum ready to go.
This is how rumors start.
Yeah, I'm putting all the pieces together now. All right, I'm convinced. Happy Freeze Pop Day, everybody, with or without the booze. Depends on if you're hanging out with Cornflake. So be careful out there, all of you. And off we go. Back to 1982, which may have been the last time I had a freeze pop until last summer.
Could have been.
But we are talking 1982, and I was wondering, what could we do different? Because we've done so many of these 1982-themed shows, and we've talked music and movies and TV and all sorts of goofy stuff, you know, the kind of stuff that we yammer about constantly around here. And I thought, just to be different for 82, I dug out some Mad magazines. I have the Mad magazines here from 1982. I have all of them.
All of them? How many is all of them?
8.
Oh, okay.
I have every issue of Mad that was published with a cover date in 1982. So let's see, that would be issues 228 through 235.
Cool that you have a complete collection there.
Got them all. We can go back and relive the year in Mad. but very quickly. I flipped through these really quickly earlier today, and I sent you some cover images so you can see the covers of some of these. But the first one, the January 82 issue, which was probably on sale in 1981, but we're going by the cover dates. But look at that beautiful Raiders of the Lost Ark cover on that Mad.
Yes, Indiana Jones has gone mad.
They did these gorgeous painted covers, and this is the scene is in, it's Indiana Jones from the opening scene where he's about to scoop up the golden idol thing.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely iconic.
He's got the bag of sand, you know, so he can make the switch. So this is Indiana Jones, and he's about to snatch up that little gold idol. But the idol has the head of Alfred E. Newman on it, of course, because every cover of Mad, you know, there's Alfred E. Newman. So now he's the little gold idol.
It's the cutest Alfred E. Newman I've ever seen.
I love this cover. There is a whole Raiders of the Lost Ark parody story inside the issue, which is great. Also, weirdly, there's a parody of Archie Bunker's Place.
That is weird.
Which was, you know, that was in production at the time. That's when Archie Bunker's Place was on TV, the weird sequel series to All in the Family, where it's just Archie and a bunch of drunk dudes at his bar. And this definitely was out in 1981 because it's actually a Christmas story. The story's called A Christmas Carol O'Connor. That's cute.
That's clever.
But it's Archie Bunker being visited by ghosts. He's actually visited by Edith Bunker's ghost. And oh, that's awful. I'm going to cry.
That's really sad, actually. You had me until Edith Bunker's ghost.
And by the ghost of George Jefferson also. Now, George Jefferson was alive, at least, in 82, but he does appear as a ghost in the story. So that's clever. There's some stuff, you read these old Mads, and there's stuff that they would not print today. Just flipping through the story, like Archie, in one single word balloon, Archie says a couple of things that I was, whoa, you could not say that. You know, even in a Mad magazine type story today, that would not be allowed.
Those were the days.
Well, yes, those were the days you could say very inappropriate things in Mad magazine. Also, his maid, look at me, here I go, we're talking about maids and butlers again.
You said you'd stop.
I can't resist, because the maid, we mentioned the maid, Mrs. Canby from Archie Bunker's Place, and she does appear in this story.
Of course she does.
But that's the first Mad from 1982 with the Raiders cover, which I love. The next one has a Don Martin cover on it, which is unusual, but love Don Martin, one of the classic Mad cartoonists, so that's fine. This one, the parodies in this issue, 229, are Family Feud. There's a whole Family Feud parody in it.
Family Feud, I think, existed to be made fun of, so that's good.
Oh, how can you not? And this is original Family Feud, of course, with Richard Dawson as your host.
Oh, that takes me back.
Kissing all the girls. Remember, that was his move. He'd kiss everybody.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Every woman that came to play Family Feud. Be a big, disgusting smooch. And it's happening right here in Mad Magazine as well. They did not miss that. But then there's also, they did James Bond. The James Bond movie that was out at this time was For Your Eyes Only. Mm-hmm. You know, with the Sheena Easton song?
Yeah, I know that one.
Although here it's called, the name of the story is For Her Thighs Only. Yikes.
Oh, that's racy.
It's like the porn parody version. But that's playing off the poster. Was just like the giant close-up of the woman's legs for the movie. So yeah, they called the story For Her Thighs Only. Imagine if Sheena Easton had sung it that way.
That I would need a mashup with that and Sugar Walls, I think.
It's yeah, it still would have been way less outrageous than Sugar Walls, a song she actually did. Good point. I think I sent you the next cover because it says Mad Invaders and it looks like Space Invaders, the whole cover.
It does. It's a really clever one. I liked this one.
They did so much video game stuff back then. The kids were obsessed with video games in the early 80s, and so Mad was right there to give it to them. So yeah, this has the Space Invaders type cover, but then one row of aliens, it's little pixelated Alfred E. Newman heads.
They're really great.
Because obviously you always need Alfred E. Newman on the cover. There's a parody of General Hospital in this issue, because General Hospital was huge in the early 80s, although I never saw it because I was not a soap opera guy.
I tried to avoid seeing it.
There's a whole thing about the moral majority in here, because the Mad would get political. It's even kind of surprising how hard they were slamming the moral majority, like the whole Jerry Falwell and the whole horrifying rise of in the Reagan years of all the evil forces that are tearing down society to this day. It was all ramping up in the early 80s, and man, MAD was right there punching back at them. And yeah, this MAD moral majority stuff in this issue is sadly
still current,
still quite relevant. Yes, in fact, they kept it going. Even the next issue after this had another piece attacking the moral majority, as well as there's a Hill Street Blues parody, and there's a big thing about the Academy Awards. The cover of this one, it's for the Academy Awards, so there's this whole audience of all the celebrities, and then it's just a giant Academy Award, the statue, but with Alfred E. Newman's face on it, of course.
That makes it that much better.
That's cute.
That's an improvement.
Oh, absolutely. The next one, though, I sent you this one. How about Greatest American Hero cover?
Yeah. I saw that at first, and I'm like, what is that? The Alfred E. Newman threw me off. But then I saw the cartoon of Robert Culp, and I knew what it was.
It's Alfred E. Newman as the Greatest American Hero, and he's kind of pulling his jacket open so you can see the red superhero costume underneath. He's got the giant William Cat mop of curly blonde hair.
It makes him look like a totally different person.
And yeah, there's Robert Culp and Connie Selica, of course, from Greatest American Hero. I was a super fan of Greatest American Hero at this time, and I love this cover.
Well, I am a super fan of Robert E. Culp, so.
Robert E. Culp?
I'm just throwing that in there.
You're just going to give him, bestow upon him, like he's straight out of the Civil War. Let's call him Robert E. Culp.
Why not? He probably has a middle initial of his own, but who couldn't use an extra?
Did he fight for the South? I forgot all about that part of the Robert Culp story. Federal agent Bill Maxwell. Very good. The next one, how about that Pac-Man cover? I sent you that one, right?
Yeah, that's snazzy.
So this cover, it's a beautiful cover, but you can see the logo looks different because they made it look like Time Magazine. They actually had the red frame around the border, and the lettering, the logo style is just like Time for their Man of the Year issue. And it's Pac-Man. It's just a giant image of Pac-Man.
Pac-Man is the Man of the Year.
Do you notice something strange about this cover, though?
Pac-Man's mouth is weird, but...
Yeah, it's the pixelated Pac-Man mouth. There's something very unusual, even besides the Time Magazine-style lettering. There's something very unusual about this cover of MAD.
Oh, really?
I remember being very surprised by this issue when I got it way back in the day.
What am I missing?
Where's Alfred E. Newman?
Oh! You make an excellent point, because he's supposed to be on every single cover.
And they would occasionally do a cover where he was not part of the main image, but when that happened, they'd at least just stick his head up in the corner. There'd be a little tiny Alfred head somewhere on the cover. But Alfred E. Newman is nowhere to be found on the Pac-Man of the Year cover.
You're right.
Very strange. I remember being struck by that at the time. And then they actually got mail about this.
Oh.
Readers were writing into MAD magazine saying, hey, where's Alfred E. Newman?
Oh, man. Did they think MAD magazine was rebranding or something?
They got a lot of mail about this, as I recall. I don't know if there was ever another issue after this without Alfred E. Newman on the cover.
They learned their lesson.
It's a beautiful cover, though. Inside, there's a parody of The Fall Guy, which I know you're a fan of.
I love that.
That's in here. And also, you would love something else in here. There's a three-page piece called A Mad Look at Other Uses for Live Lobsters.
Other uses for live lobsters. Yeah, that sounds like it's got my name on it.
It's three pages, and it's just ridiculous. It's just all these crazy cartoon images of people doing stuff with lobsters.
That is a bit wacky.
And it says, like, paper towel rack, and there's just a big goofy lobster holding up a paper towel.
I bet they'd be good at that.
Yeah. Turn indicator. And there's a lobster just sitting in the back window of a car, pointing its claws to the left. It's so stupid. You would love it. I'll send you some of these lobster images. Three pages they spent on that. It's just lobsters doing things.
It's like they knew I'd want to see it someday.
There's a lobster pizza pie slicer. I like that. I could actually use that.
Yeah, I would normally call dibs on that, but you can have it.
So much you could do with lobsters. I had no idea. The next issue has the cast of MASH on it. Well, this was the end of MASH. after 11 years, the final episode of MASH, which was like the biggest ratings in TV history, maybe still to this day, I'm not sure. But everybody was freaking out over the final episode of MASH, and MASH is on the cover of this issue. It says, "Mad finishes off MASH, dishonorably discharged." And there's a great caricature image of the whole cast. And I mean the whole cast. What's cool is they actually included characters who had left the series years earlier. So it has like Henry Blake and Trapper John.
Oh, that's a cool nod to the folks that had already moved on.
And in fact, the other guy who had left the show by this point, right front and center, is Alfred E. Newman as Radar O'Reilly.
That's perfect.
It is perfect. He really looks like him. That's not much of a stretch to do Alfred as Radar. Man, that was such an event, though. I remember watching that final MASH. It was 2.5 hours long. But here they are on the cover of MAD, looking good. And the last issue of MAD from the year 1982, I sent you this one as well, because this is a very important cover for us. It's Rocky III, and there's Sylvester Stallone about to fight Mr. T. But it's the Alfred E. Newman face on Mr. T.
It is like they made it for us.
Man, that looks ridiculous.
Which means they did it right.
Sylvester Stallone does not look pleased about having to fight the Alfred E. Newman-faced Clubber Lang.
And I'm sure Alfred E. Newman pities the fool.
Now, also very important for our purposes, inside this issue, they do Facts of Life.
Like a spoof on it?
Yeah, there's a whole Facts of Life parody story in here. And it's great. And I'll send you some images from this as well. But I'm always so impressed by the artists of MAD, and especially when they do these movie parodies and TV parodies, because the caricature artists that worked for MAD were just fantastic. And guys like Mort Drucker and Angelo Torres drew the Facts of Life one here. Jack Davis would do some. And like, it's one thing to draw a caricature and have it look like the person and look funny. Okay, fine. But then to do a whole story, you know, they do like a 6-page story. And you'd have to draw each character, you know, 30 times or whatever.
Yeah, that's really involved.
Well, yeah, because now you're drawing them facing different directions from different angles and with different facial expressions to tell the story. And yet it always has to look like the person and it has to look funny. And these artists were amazing. They did it. They've captured the Facts of Life girls perfectly throughout an entire story just for us to wrap up the year. A magical year, 1982, at MAD Magazine.
That is a spectacular finale.
I don't know why that occurred to me, to just look at MAD. But MAD kind of works as a good time capsule. You know, you flip through old issues of MAD, and they will take you back to that year. Between the parodies and just all the other pieces of them, they're just always kind of hitting whatever's in the news at that time.
Yeah, it was a really good look back on 1982 MAD style.
Why not? Maybe we'll do that again sometime. But maybe not. Maybe we're done. What we are doing for the rest of our 1982 show right now, however, is we're throwing it over to you. And I believe, once again, you're taking us to the world of TV commercials.
I am, and I hope our listeners are ready for a little bit of cornflake on cornflake action here.
What in the world does that mean?
That means we're looking back at 1982's commercials for Kellogg's Cornflakes.
Yes, you sent these to me, these videos, right before we started recording, so I have seen them.
But for Kellogg's Cornflakes in 1982, the commercials were different depending on where you lived.
Sure.
So I found one from 1982 that aired in North America, and it's the one I remember. And I know I remember this because I thought I was supposed to go and find my face on the box of a cereal, if it was for me, from this Kellogg's Cornflake commercial. Do you remember this?
Vaguely. It seemed slightly familiar, but it's the goofy little Kellogg's Cornflakes commercial jingle playing. And then it's people, it's kids and all the people getting out their box of cereal, which is like a white blank cover on the cereal box, and then suddenly that person's actual face would suddenly appear on the box of cornflakes.
Imagine being the kid trying to find their own face in a cereal box. That was me.
Well, yeah, it certainly is what they were suggesting is you're on the cereal box, kids. And then there you are, your cornflake.
Yeah. And I don't remember my face ever being on any of those boxes.
Yeah, after seeing this commercial, you, of all people, would certainly expect to see your own face on the cereal box. That makes sense.
But they have a couple of kids, a woman with her hair in rollers that is suddenly disgusted to find that her face is on the front of the box because she's not made up for the day. A nun who's putting some strawberries in her cornflakes. And then at the end of the commercial, it's kind of like half a guy's face. You notice something that I did not know about this last guy who pops up in the commercial.
When I watched this just before the show, I assumed this was the reason you selected this one to send to me. Yeah, the old man who peeks out from behind the table at the end was also in the commercial that you picked last week.
Yeah, it was a Mickey Rooney recurrence, but I didn't recognize him.
You sent me another Mickey Rooney commercial.
You thought I meant to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not that coordinated, Kevin.
By total coincidence, you sent me another Mickey Rooney commercial.
And he's kind of doing that thing like Wilson from Home Improvement, where you just see the top half of his face.
Every week, Santa Claus is coming to town. Well, there's Mickey. I had no idea Mickey Rooney was cranking out commercials in the early 80s, but there he is.
Evidently he was. And then I just thought it would be fun to send you a commercial running in 1982 for Kellogg's Corn Flakes in Australia.
Yes, the other one was from Australia. So totally different song, which did not sound familiar to me at all. And what's going on in this one? This is the one with the twin girls?
Yeah, it's almost like they're doing a double mint thing, but for cereal.
Yep.
In this case, there's no Mickey Rooney, but there are a couple of celebrities in this that went by, like, basically they were called the Blakeney twins.
Oh, they were famous?
They were.
Did they play Crocodile Dundee? I'm trying to think of Australian celebrities.
That would have been funny. But Gail and Jillian, who were the Blakeney twins, they attempted to be on television for things. They do pilot episodes and it would flop. Wow. They tried to release some music in the early 90s. But
they were huge stars.
That also flopped. Well, I think one of the reasons you would like them is one of the first things that they were in on television was a show called Wombat.
I guess that makes sense. I assume every show in Australia is called Wombat.
I think that's a fair presumption to have.
Yeah, that is my presumption.
Throughout the commercial, though, they're shaking the box to kind of make a percussion noise. And I just want to say right now, no shaking the cornflake.
Absolutely. So I was entirely unfamiliar with the Blakeney twins, but you're a super fan, I take it.
Oh, yeah.
You're obsessed.
They worked with Kylie Minogue.
Did they work with Kylie? Okay.
They did.
Are they in the video for I Should Be So Lucky?
Maybe.
Maybe. Let's assume, yes, they are. So they're chomping on cornflakes over there in Australia as well. I like the classic cornflakes box with the chicken on it.
Yeah. What's his name? Cornelius E. Rooster?
Oh, right. Yeah, something like that. I forgot the cornflakes chicken has a name, doesn't it?
I'm just deciding today that everybody's middle initial is E.
It has the initial E. Yeah, that chicken fought proudly in the Civil War as well, alongside Robert Culp. That's correct. They were at Gettysburg together, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Well, there is a fine, fine pair of from opposite ends of the world. Cornflakes commercials.
And I promise as the segment goes on, I will not always pick a food or a beverage.
Okay. Who knows what's going to happen for 1983, but we'll be ready.
We will see.
All right. Well, hey, I think we can keep this one super short today, and let's just get out of here.
Okay. Flopcast.net is our website. We're also at facebook.com/flopcast. We're on Mastodon at universodon.com/@flopcast. And we are on Instagram also. The_flopcast is our handle there. Over on Apple Podcasts, what we would love for you to do, listeners, is leave us a rating and or a review so that other podcast listeners can find us and listen to us talk about weird things from the 80s. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Oh, well, before we were called the Sponge Awareness Foundation, our original name was the Wombats. That's true.
Oh, is it a copyright issue?
All of our music videos actually starred the Blakeney twins.
Ah, I see, it was a joint project.
That part was not true. Cornflake, thanks for heading back to 1982 with me, everybody. I hope you found something you could take away from this week's show. I hope this was a educational and enlightening experience for you all, but I doubt it. Anyway, please, of course, be safe, be kind, be silly. 1983 next week. See you there.
Peace and cookies.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And we're inviting you to join us as we delve into the dawn of the DC. We'll be reviewing new titles such as The Unstoppable Doom Patrol, Shazam, Green Lantern, Titans, Justice Society of America, and more. We'll also be reviewing DC Television's final season of The Flash, Titans, and Doom Patrol. Join us every week on the Earth Station DCU podcast, part of the ESO Network.
Okay, this is the secret after show, the part of the show that nobody hears because nobody knows that it even exists. It's just between you and me, Cornflake, but you have yet another secret 1982 commercial for us.
A bonus, totally zany commercial, and this once again was for a cereal, but Bran Flakes instead. Did I ever tell you that I had a friend nicknamed Bran Flakes?
What? No. This is...
She liked my nickname Cornflakes, so she decided that she would be called Bran Flakes.
I don't think I can take much more of this. You and your friends.
Me and my friends and their silly names. Yeah, so I discovered while I was looking at the Cornflakes commercial, a Bran Flakes commercial popped up, and this one was from the UK, and it was really weird. It's a couple having their breakfast out on the balcony, and there is a jingle playing, and it's a guy singing, but the girl is lip syncing to it.
Yeah, it's really creepy when the girl starts singing and like a weird British dude's voice comes out of her. Yeah.
Well, people love these commercials because really? I discovered this is just the one from 1982. This was the ad campaign throughout all the 80s for Kellogg's Bran Flakes in the UK. It was the same thing, same guy singing. And
oh no!
It was always the same guy singing, no matter who was lip syncing it. It was usually a female that was lip syncing to it. They did it the whole time, and evidently it worked.
So the guy and the girl are singing about Bran Flakes.
Yeah,
they're out on the balcony of their apartment, but then they kind of pan back, and the whole building is full of people identically dressed singing about Bran Flakes on their apartment balconies. It's a whole building of these weird freaks.
Yeah. Top to bottom.
Yeah.
All the way up the floors and all the way down.
Is this an accurate depiction of life in England in 1982? Is this what it was like? Because I like to think that it was.
It probably was, and it was tasty. Very, very tasty.
It's one of the scariest things I've ever seen.
But it's great.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the T Public store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.